The following recording was produced by Christ Redeemer Church of Hanover, New Hampshire. The speaker is Doug Cooper. You may find more information on the church and its various resources on the web at www.christredeemerchurch.org.
The word of the Lord this morning comes from Proverbs. Proverbs 3:13 through 15. Happy is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding. For her proceeds are better than the profits of silver and her gain than fine gold. She is more precious than rubies, and all the things that you may desire cannot compare with her. 18. She is a tree of life to those who take hold of her, and happy are all who retain her. Proverbs 4:20 through 23. My son, be attentive to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Let them not escape from your sight. Keep them within your heart, for they are life to those who find them, and healing to all their flesh. Keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flows the springs of life. Proverbs 12:25. Anxiety in a man's heart weighs him down, but a good word makes him glad. Proverbs 13:12. Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but a desire fulfilled is a tree of life. Proverbs 14:30. A tranquil heart gives life to the flesh, but envy makes the bones rot. Proverbs 15:13-30. A glad heart makes a cheerful face, but by sorrow of the heart, the spirit is crushed. The light of the eyes rejoices the heart, and good news refreshes the bones. Proverbs 17:22. A joyful heart is good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones. This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Longrins, for leading us in song this morning. And good morning, everyone. If you're here this morning and maybe you don't know me, I should introduce myself. My name is Doug Cooper, and I serve as the pastor here. And as you can see, we're back in our study in the book of Proverbs. In case maybe you missed us here last week for one reason or another, when we gathered here, I raised the topic of our emotions and how they relate to wisdom, because the book of Proverbs actually has a great deal to say about this particular area of our lives. And what we learn here in the book of Proverbs, and I find this very interesting, I said this last week, I'm going to say it again, is that this is interesting, that wisdom can have a profound effect upon our emotions, how they develop, how we view them, how we navigate and manage our emotions, how we continue to develop in them. And last Sunday, on this topic of emotions, our primary focus was on anger, because it receives a lot of attention in the book of Proverbs. I don't know if we should be surprised by that or not. I think maybe we shouldn't be. But similarly, another one that gets the spotlight a great deal in the book of Proverbs is joy, which will be our focus for this morning. You may have picked up on that as you were hearing Joe read. There's lots of passages that I could have chosen from the book of Proverbs that touches on this very thing. And I'll just say at the outset that this message, I think, is going to be a bit more like 4,000 feet, a bit more theological in nature, and in that way maybe a bit more topical than last week's message. But joy. We're going to take some time to consider joy and things pertaining to joy, whether that might be like the inverse of joy or other things related to it. Joy, especially when we're understanding it in the ways that the scriptures present it to us, it's a very good This is obvious, right? It's a very good thing. It's a life-giving emotional response. So no big surprise there. And it's one that I'm sure that we could all use more of in our lives. We could all stand to grow in this area. Would like to. And I think that we can. Is the encouraging word that I've got for us this morning. I think that this is something that we can develop in with wisdom. And so the big question for this morning is, what is the connection? What's the connection between wisdom and joy? How might they relate to one another? Like, what role does wisdom have to play in the development of joy in our lives? So here's a plan for how to come at this. First off, we're going to consider the reality of joy. What is it? Why is it important? That'll be the first thing. Secondly, we're going to consider the operation of joy. How is it meant to function in our lives? How are we to actually develop in it? And then lastly, the source of joy. Where does our joy come from? Where should it come from? Where can we go to get it? So one more time on those, in case you're writing these things down. We're going to begin with the reality of joy. Then we're going to go to the operation of joy. And then lastly, the source of joy. So beginning with the reality. I'm going to start us off the way that I often start us off with this sort of thing, with some with a few definitions. I find it to be helpful. So, you know, what is joy? What is it that we need to know about joy? Here's a definition for us, and it comes from someone who has spent a lot of time and thought and energy and study just trying to get at the heart and the reality of joy. This comes from pastor and writer John Piper. You may know this name. And to go along with what I just said there, you could argue that this topic of joy is kind of like the life work of Pastor John. I mean, he's touched on other things, but this seems to be where he spent a lot of his time, you know, focused on what we might call biblical joy or gospel joy or Christian joy. And here's what he had to say about it. Christian joy, and this is not exhaustive on his part, not even close. Christian joy is a good feeling. Okay, and so you can hear like an emotional dynamic being highlighted there. Christian joy is a good feeling in the soul produced by the Holy Spirit as he causes us to see the beauty of Christ in the Word, in God's Word, and in the world around us, okay? And by the way, just to fill this out a little bit more, anytime that I ever think about Pastor John Piper, I almost always think of Psalm 16, verse 11, because it's just been really critical, I think, for him in the ways that he's thought about this and developed this working theology of joy. And so I'm going to read that for us. This is David. This is the last verse of Psalm 16, and David is saying this to God. He's saying this in reference to God. He says, you, God, make known to me the path of life. In your presence, there is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore. And I wish that as I was reading that I could like somehow conjure up the kind of like enthusiasm that John Piper like possesses when he's, you know, reading something like what I just read there, but I couldn't possibly do it, so I'm not going to try. But the most obvious to me, the most obvious and important thing to draw out of this verse, the thing that it highlights for us, I think, is that joy is something that God has. It's something that God has, and it's something that God has always had. The God of the Bible is a God of profound joy. If you didn't hear anything else from that verse that I just read, I feel like that's the thing that you ought to hear. Whatever joy may be, God has it, and he has it in spades. He's full of it. He's full of joy. In his presence, there is fullness of joy, an overabundance of it, more than you and I would know what to do with, okay? At his right hand are pleasures forevermore. Now, why or how could this be? How or why could this be true? In eternity past, before the creation of the earth, told you this is going to be kind of theological, right? Before the creation of the earth, before the creation of the universe, before there was ever in us, how is it that God was there all along existing in a perfect and fully realized state of joy? Like, how could that be? How does that compute? And that's a question that none of us, I'll just say, can fully grasp. But rightly so, many have tried to. Many have tried to answer this kind of question throughout the centuries, and many theologians have suggested that it must have something to do with the Trinity. This fullness of joy in God must have something to do with the Trinity. At our most recent youth collective gathering, so I'm talking about our teens, when we get together, we kicked off a Bible study just the last time that we met in the Gospel of Mark. And a question that came up during our time was, what is the Trinity? Like, how would you explain it? And then there were several other questions that followed, more questions about the Trinity, which got my head spinning and helped me to realize that this study is going to be, like, quite a ride and that I need to pray more about it. And then again yesterday, I was at the Fall Youth Conference, and this was highlighted for me one more time. Laura, you were there. With me, we were sitting in on this panel where, this is like post-conference, basically. Kids got to write down questions on 3x5 cards, send them up to the leaders. A panel of us were up there. We're going through these questions together, attempting to answer questions posed by kids that no one really is qualified to answer. Okay, kind of like, okay, yeah, we're the experts, sure. And yet, we ought to try to, though. I think one of the things I'm trying to say. We ought to try to. We ought to grapple with these sorts of things. It's important that we do this. It's important that we think deeply about God and look to his word for answers to our questions. And so again, how might it be that God has always existed in a perfect and fully realized state of joy? How could that be? And what many have suggested, coming back to the Trinity, is that because God himself, Father, Son, and Spirit, exist and have always existed as a joyful community, okay? God lives in perfect, everlasting, joyful communion within himself. And I cannot do too much to explain that more here and now if I'm going to continue on with this message. But other than to just say it, okay, the Trinitarian God of the Bible exists as a joyful community. So just to the extent that you can, just kind of like let that sink in. And so what does that have to do with us, right? Like, Doug, come on. What does this have to do with us? And this is another wild consideration. So this same joy-filled God desires to then share his joy with us. This is his intention. This is his design, that we would live in light of his joy. This is what he wants for you and me. And we see this all over the place. We see this throughout the scriptures. We see this throughout the Old Testament. We see this throughout the New Testament. We see this in the verses that we have printed for us this morning from Proverbs. What we have here, this is all essentially these verses from Proverbs. This is all essentially instructional. So much of the book, you know this by now, has been framed with this narrative in which you have a father who is imparting his like aged, hard-earned wisdom to his son. Wisdom for life, right? Wisdom for living well. You know, this is what your son, this is what you're going to need as you head off on your own. this is what you need, this is what you need, this is what you need to avoid, et cetera, et cetera. And if we're reading between the lines here in this medley of verses that we've got, what we're hearing from these passages is that in order to live well, we need God's joy. We need it. We need it. And by the way, you may have noticed that we get a lot of like different words here in this medley of passages. We get words like happy, glad. We get the word tranquil. But a closer look should reveal for us that these words all do pertain to God's joy, so long as we're understanding these things in light of his wisdom. This leads us to our second point now, the operation of joy. So we just considered the reality of joy. Now, the operation of joy. How is it meant to function in our lives? How are we to develop in it? How should it operate in our lives? Please look back with me at our first passage there in Proverbs chapter 3. And I will just point out, maybe you're like looking and you're noticing like, the passage from chapter 3 is the only one that is not in the English Standard Version. Why did he choose to switch it up that way? And it's because of that word happy that you see used several times. In other versions, it's translated as blessed, which is great. But the underlying meaning of this word is, oh, how happy. When you read it and say the English Standard Version and you read blessed, that's what your brain should be telling you. Oh, how happy. How happy is the one who, ... So that said, let's read it now. Okay, verse 13. Happy is the man. Oh, how happy is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding, for her proceeds are better than the profits of silver and her gain than fine gold. She is more precious than rubies, and all the things you may desire cannot compare with her. Verse 18, she is a tree of life to those who take hold of her. And happy, oh, how happy are all who retain her. And I don't think that this is describing for us some kind of fleeting, surfacey, superficial sort of a happiness. Rather, it's quite the opposite of that, okay? I think it's apparent that this is something very significant. This is something very substantive, substantial, and I would argue that what's being described for us here is God's joy. One of the ways that it comes to us, I think we're being told, one of the ways that it operates in our lives is through a discovery and an embrace of God's wisdom. Okay, so we're making the connection now between wisdom and joy. How does wisdom relate to joy? What role does wisdom have to play in the development of joy in our lives? And this passage lays it out for us quite plainly, I think. But to help with this, I've got another definition for you all. I've got another definition. Here's how one person described God's wisdom. So I gave a definition for joy. Now God's wisdom. Here it is. Biblical wisdom invites people to a way of life, all right? So, time out. You've heard this from me before as we've been going through this series. So, wisdom, it's not merely knowledge. It's not merely good advice. It's a way of life. God's wisdom is a way of life. It's a way to live. So, starting again, biblical wisdom invites people to a way of life that is in harmony with both the created order, hit and pause again, hope you don't mind. In other words, wisdom puts us in harmony with God's design, okay? Wisdom puts us in harmony. It gets us connected with his way, with his intentions for us, with his life that he's inviting us into. Okay, so one more time, I'm starting at the top again. Biblical wisdom invites people to a way of life that is in harmony with both the created order and God's redemptive work. We're going to touch on this more later. In the Old Testament, wisdom is oriented around the fear of the Lord. In the New Testament, wisdom is amplified and reoriented around Christ. There's that redemptive work. And so here's the connection between God's wisdom and God's joy. Discovering and embracing God's wisdom looks like us living in harmony with God and his wise designs and intentions for our lives. That's what it looks like, okay? And when we're living into that, one of the natural byproducts of that life is that we come to know and we come to experience his joy. Why, we should ask. Well, why would that be? Because that's who he is. I mean, as we intersect with him, as we engage in a life with him, it should result in the experience of his joy, because that's who he is. In his presence, there is fullness of joy. At his right hand are pleasures forevermore. An embrace of his life and his way is an embrace of his joy, because ultimately, it's an embrace of him, our all-wise, joyful God. Or better put, it's the experience of his embrace of us. It's the experience of being embraced by the all-wise, all-joyful God. Now, as I'm saying this, some of you may be scratching your heads because you may be thinking right now, yeah, that sounds great, Doug. But that doesn't sound like my life. I'm trying to walk in God's way. I'm trying to embrace God's wisdom for my life, but if I'm being honest, my life is kind of hard. I don't always feel very joyful. In fact, I kind of struggle to be joyful. So if you're thinking that, I'll say this. If by joyful we mean happy-go-lucky, gee-willikers, isn't life just grand? If that's what we mean by joyful, we might not be talking about the same thing, is the kind of joy that God has for us. It's not that it might not include that at times, but if that's the way we were going to describe it, I don't think that would be a good description. I was trying to think of a good way to describe this. This is really kind of banging my head against the wall this week, just like trying to come up with good illustrations. And so I contacted my buddy TJ, and I was just kind of like using him as a sounding board, just like trying to talk through it. You know, what do you think? And he then went on to kind of share his own experience with this. And I was just like, well, there's my illustration. Can I talk about you, TJ, in my message? Would that be okay with you? And he thankfully he said yes. So some of you have heard me talk about TJ before, and you may have forgotten, I don't know. But as a reminder to some of you, a little over 21 months ago, I was asking for prayer for TJ at one of our community prayer gatherings. Okay, so TJ was, at the time that I asked for that prayer, he was in a really, really dark spot. He was in a really bad way. It involved in a decades-long struggle with various, very serious addictions, and he was in bad shape. He was in danger, really. He was in danger of losing everything, I think, in danger of losing the things most precious to him, in danger of losing his wife and his wife, Sierra, and his children. And his wife, Sierra, she reached out to me. She asked if I would be willing to participate in an intervention for TJ, and I did. And we as a church, following this, made a financial contribution from our benevolence fund to help TJ get help. To see him, he was able to go to a remarkable program called Redemption House. It's a Christian-based rehabilitation center out in the Midwest. He went there. He lived there for 3 months. He graduated the program. He went home, where he described to me that that's where the real work began, that after the 3 months, coming home was like the hardest thing that he'd ever done in his life. But I'm just really overjoyed to say that TJ's nearly clean 2 years now. And By the way, he's super grateful to us. He's super grateful for our support. In fact, he plans to come out here at some point in the coming months to stand up here where I am and to share his testimony with us. And I'm really looking forward to that day. I don't want to tell his whole story, but a little bit of background. You guys have heard this from me many times. So TJ's mom and dad essentially led me to faith in Christ. Okay. His father, Teddy, died a few years after I came to faith after a long, brutal experience with Lou Gehrig's disease. Okay, so and TJ, you know, rode that out with his dad. Just a few years ago, he lost his mother, Mary Jane. She had been through decades of back and forth struggles with cancer. Horrific. Just terrific. And I mean, that's just part of TJ's story. You know, there's a lot to it. There's a lot of trauma. It's been a very rough road. And what TJ would tell you is that most of the circumstances of his life right now pretty much remain the same. This is kind of like what the aha moment was in my conversation with him. The loss of his mother and his father and the experiences that he went through, watching them go through what they went through, still hurt him. You know, there are more tears to come as it relates to that in his life. Working his job in the prison system, which he's been doing for a long time, and which has been very difficult, it's still difficult. He'll tell you that. It's still very tough. Parenting 5 small children, relating and connecting with his wife, as he's navigating this whole new chapter in his life, is still tough. In fact, he might tell you that it's even more tough, that it's tougher than it's ever been before because he's actually trying to, like, live his life. You know what I mean? And so very little has actually changed. This was what he was talking about. But what he'll tell you is that now the big difference is that he has the joy of the Lord, and he didn't before, and that has made all of the difference and is making all of the difference for him. And what I think he's describing in that is a new set of circumstances that the fluctuating circumstances of his life has no say over. Okay? That the fluctuating circumstances of his life must submit to and answer to. This makes me think of a quote from the Welsh minister and medical doctor, Martin Lloyd-Jones. He says, and this is in your time of reflection at the top of that page, man's happiness was never meant to be determined by his circumstances. And that is the fatal blunder that we all tend to make, that we see our happiness in light of what's happening in the ebbs and flows of our life. Man's happiness, he goes on to say, depends on one thing only, and that is his relationship to God. And what I think he means when he's saying happiness really is this idea of joy that we're trying to get at. We cannot get it anywhere else. We must come back to the soul and to God who made it. We were made for him. We are meant for him. We have a correspondence with him, and we will never come to rest until, like that needle on the compass, we strike that northern point, and there we come to rest nowhere else. That's what TJ was describing, that finally the needle of his life has come to rest in the right place. And it's providing him rest in the midst of really, really, really hard stuff, okay? And what I hear Martin Lloyd-Jones describing here is that embracing of God's way, of God's life, of God's design, of God's wisdom, and it's not always easy. In fact, it's often quite difficult. And it's not always accompanied by a flood of emotional tranquility. Though again, I'll keep saying, it's not that we can't experience those things. It's not that we won't experience those things. And it's not that when we do experience those things, that it's not from God. But it doesn't always come with that. I think we all know that. If you've been around the block a few times, you know that sometimes things can feel rather flat. Sometimes things can feel rather dark. But the most critical thing is that we keep on entrusting ourselves, not to our emotional ups and downs, but to Him, you see. He's the foundation of our joy. This makes me think of several other illustrations. I'll just share one. Just think with me. Think of things in your life. Hopefully this is helpful. Think of things in your life that involve a very long and difficult journey and investment. Like, it's not going to happen quick. Stuff like that. But things that we choose to stay with, we trust the process, we keep investing in, because we're confident that those things will eventually pay off, or at least we really, really hope so. Okay? This makes me think of children in particular. I've already been talking about kids a lot this morning. I figured I would just stay with that. I think of the education of children, just as one example. When parents and teachers begin to educate children, they are choosing to enter into this long-term commitment and belief that goes on and on and on. It's a bit of a faith experiment, really. You're trusting that little bit by little bit, you're training and shaping a human being. That's the idea, right? Sometimes I need to remind myself of this. This makes me think again of the father from Proverbs speaking to his son. You're trusting, and again, trusting that one day at a time, one step at a time, you're developing this child or these children into responsible, loving, productive human beings. Hopefully, you're hoping that this will happen eventually. You teach them the alphabet, right? And then, hopefully they learn some words, like maybe some three-letter words, and then they begin to form some sentences, and they can write, and maybe they can write a paragraph, or maybe they can write a short story. Maybe someday they could write a brilliant novel. Who knows, right? They can learn this sophisticated use, this art of language, and all that comes with it, communication, relationship. But you can't speed through it. You have to take the long road. You have to. And there are times when you want to give up. There's times when you want to say, teach yourself, kid. I've had it with you, Go parent yourself. I give up. This isn't fun anymore. I want out, No, we don't do that, right? No. I've never done that. But hopefully, in these kinds of processes, these long-haul processes, we don't give up. Hopefully we have the vision and the faith and the conviction to keep putting one foot in front of the other, and hopefully, God have mercy, our kids turn out all right. The thing that we're investing in works out. The vision takes full form. But all that said, it's just like every metaphor breaks down eventually. With this, what we're talking about here, this is something quite different from that. And I mean that in the best possible way, because rather than it being a mere process, because I'm not saying it's not, it is, but rather than it merely being a process, we're talking about a person, we're talking about a relationship that we're taking this long road with, okay? Rather than a good possibility, like, gee whiz, I really hope this works out, we're talking about a certain, inevitable hope that is leading to a certain and ultimate joy. It's just a matter of time, right? We will get there. We will. And this leads us to our last point now, the source of our joy. The source of our joy. What Pastor John's definition of joy was alluding to, and that definition that I was stretching out on wisdom, I think that what they were describing is our need to submit not just to God's created order, though we need to do that, but our need to submit to God's redemptive work. Like that being a wisdom. That being a way, that being a way of life that we need to, like, keep putting one foot in front of the other on, okay? What we encounter in the gospel of Jesus Christ, and this is the source of our joy, by the way, is the crowning manifestation of God's wisdom for us, okay? And if a description would help, you know, like, what are we actually talking about now, Doug? I would say that I couldn't do better than the song that we sang earlier. I'm just going to read the first two stanzas. Oh, the deep, deep love of Jesus. Feel free to look back with me on this if you'd like. Oh, the deep, deep love of Jesus. So this is what we encounter in the gospel of Jesus Christ, right? Oh, the deep, deep love of Jesus, vast, unmeasured, boundless, free, rolling as a mighty ocean in its fullness over me. Underneath me, all around me, is the current of thy love, leading onward, leading homeward to my glorious rest above. Now the second stanza. Oh, the deep, deep love of Jesus, spread his praise from shore to shore. Rejoice in him. Be joyful in him, right? How he loveth, ever loveth, changeth never. So different than you and I, right? Changeth never, nevermore. How he watches o'er his loved ones, died to call them all his own. How for them he intercedeth, watcheth over them from the throne. Okay. So this is the new circumstance that I've been talking about here. Okay. This, of course, is a poetic description of our hope that we have in the gospel of Jesus Christ, that it provides for us something far greater, something far more stable than our fleeting attempts at happiness that we're always swinging at, okay? This makes me think of a few things. I haven't looked too much at our passages, have I? Let's look down at Proverbs 15. We've got two verses there. And with each of these verses, I want to make some connections, some gospel connections for us. I'll begin with verse 13. These are things that were coming to my mind as I read these things this week. A glad heart makes a cheerful face, but by sorrow of heart, the spirit is crushed. Okay, this line, but by sorrow of heart, the spirit is crushed, made me think of the words of the prophet Isaiah in Isaiah 53, you know. And by the way, like, can we not connect to this? Like, is it not just so true? By sorrow of heart, the spirit is crushed. How devastating. Let me read to you from Isaiah. This is God's provision for us. Surely he, and this is a prophecy concerning Jesus Christ, surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God and afflicted, but he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace, and with his wounds we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. Okay. This is the story of the joy that has been procured for us in the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, Proverbs 15:30. The light of the eyes rejoices the heart. And as I've read about this, this seems to be speaking of friends, which, by the way, is one more provision of God for our joy. The light of the eyes rejoices the heart, and good news refreshes the bones. We need good news. Like, if we're going to experience real joy that is substantial, substantive, significant, we need good news. This makes me think of Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. It says, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. This makes me think of this long journey that we're on, right? Verse 2, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. So Jesus provided this for us, and it was his joy to do it. It was his joy to redeem us. I know I'm going long, everybody. I'll wrap this up. But a way that I could wrap this up would be to try to end in a very practical sort of way. So how can we do this? Like, how can we work to develop this kind of joy in our lives? And this is the last Sunday before Thanksgiving. It makes me think of the importance of gratitude, of thankfulness. I think that gratitude and joy, like, they belong together. You know, that this is part of God's design for us. And so I would encourage us to deeply reflect upon the gospel of Jesus Christ and allow that to produce in us gratitude. And then let's send that gratitude up to him in praise. I'm later for my benediction, I'm going to read from Colossians 3, 15 through 17, but I'm going to end my message by reading it now, and then I'm going to pray. But just listen to it and think about how could practical application, what might it look like for me to embrace this kind of gratitude that I'm hearing about? Hear these words. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in one body. So this is a word to all of us. And be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom, singing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs with thankfulness in your hearts to God. And whatever you do, in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. Let's pray. And Father, what better way could we finish our time here but to offer up thanks to you? Oh, how happy we are to hear such good news. Oh, how happy we desire to be in you, God. Would you by your Spirit, just like the winds that are outside right now, would you bring in a fresh breeze? Would you cause us to be moved yet again by this remarkable good news that we have inherited in your Son? I pray if there's anybody here this morning who those winds have not blown upon yet, I pray that they would blow this morning. If there's anyone here who has not tasted and seen your goodness, God, I pray that they would this morning. We give thanks to you for all these things. In the name of your Son, amen.